Genesis chapter 12. We're going to return to our discussion of the Abrahamic covenant. This is one of the most important covenants of the Old Testament. It has long-lasting ramifications to it. We won't get into all of those today, but we will probably, I think next week maybe, get into more of the long-lasting impacts of this. I mentioned this last week, but I'll just, by way of review, if we read the covenant, if we read the scripture normally with a literal hermeneutic, meaning we just read it at face value and read it how it would normally be read, we come away with saying this is an unconditional covenant. There was no God saying, if you do this, then I'll do this kind of wording, as there are in others. It's a literal covenant. You know, that we're not led to believe that these are just a lot of, you know, figurative things that God is saying. And it's an eternal covenant. And that eternal aspect we'll get into more detail later on in another lesson. But this is an eternal covenant. Genesis 17:13, Genesis 17:19 say very clearly that this covenant has long-lasting ramifications. It's an eternal covenant. So God gives and restates the covenant with Abraham at several different points. Genesis 12 is the first time. He's going to restate it or perhaps embellish a little bit in other chapters, chapter 13, chapter 15, chapter 17 as well. There could be elaborations on certain points, but generally speaking, in all of those reiterations of the covenant, there are basically three main parts of it. And that's what we're going to specifically look at today. So the parts, the particulars about this covenant. Number one, God promised Abraham a land. So you look in verse 1, get out from your country, from your family, from your father's house to a land I will show you. Okay, this is a very clear aspect of the covenant. God promises them a land. Now, someone asked last week, where was Ur located? That's where Abraham was originally from. And you see here on the screen, we have the city of Ur. There are a couple different guesses as where Ur was. One is more south, one is more north. I believe this is the southern opinion of where Ur was. I think the northern view is a little bit more closer to Babylon up here. But just for sake, we'll pull this picture since I can't rework the picture. But we have Ur down here, and when Abram would have traveled with his family, he would have followed, really, this is the Mesopotamian Valley, right? The Fertile Crescent, we sometimes hear referred to as. So he would have followed this general trail up north. Haran is up here, and then he would have gone his way south, back along the Mediterranean Sea. That would have, because that's where the water is, that's where, you know, the safety is, all that kind of stuff. So that would have been the general pattern of how he came about to the land. Didn't happen in a day, obviously. Didn't happen in a week. This has been a lot of walking, a lot of traveling. Would have taken some time. In chapter 12, verse 7, Abraham comes to the land of the Canaanites, and God says, "Come." I'm sorry. That's chapter 11, verse 7. The Lord appeared to Abraham and said, "To your descendants I will give this land." Okay, so there's God indicating, all right, Abraham, you've basically reached the area. So I will give you this land. I will give to your descendants, I will give this land. Abraham built an altar to the Lord who had appeared to him. So Abraham did finally reach the location. Now, later in chapter 13, after going down to Egypt and returning to Bethel, God gives a little bit more details. If you look at chapter 13, verse 14. Actually, I don't have these on the screen. I do. The Lord said to Abram, after Lot had separated from him, "Lift your eyes now, look from the place where you are, northward, southward, eastward, westward, for all the land which you see, I give to you and your descendants forever." Chapter 17, verse 8, God reiterates again, this is the land of Canaan. But also in chapter 15, we have a couple here, geographic markers. The Lord made a covenant with Abraham, saying, "To your descendants I've given this land from the river of Egypt," that's like the Nile, "to the great river, the river Euphrates." Kenites, Kenizzites, and all the other ites of the land. Okay, so God does give some kind of boundaries here. This is a broad land that God has in mind for Abram and his descendants. That's one part. The second part of the covenant, God promised Abram descendants. Chapter 12, verse 2, he says, I'll make of you a great nation. That obviously requires descendants. Literally, God said that from Abraham would come a great nation. He would have at least one child in order to make that happen. Now, the King James uses the word seed. The New King James, which I have before me, uses the term descendants to often refer to this, to these descendants of Abram. Now, the word does mean descendants, but I tend to personally like the word seed a little bit more because of the trail of that theme in the Old Testament. Right? You have the seed of the woman in Genesis 3. And you have the seed of Abraham and all these seed of David and so forth. It's not that descendants is a bad translation at all. It's certainly not, but that's just a personal preference. I like the word seed. But also, Paul gives a divinely inspired interpretation of Genesis 12, 7. To your descendants, I will give this land. That's to your seed. That's the word seed. And Paul talks about this in Galatians 3, 16, where he argues that this word seed is singular, not plural as of many. That's a fascinating text. And Paul's referring back to this Abrahamic covenant that God is promising to Abraham's seed as to one. And he obviously argues that that one seed is who? It's Christ. That is Abraham's ultimate descendant. Just like similarly we call David's greater son Christ, so we could also say Abraham's greater seed is also Christ. There is an immediate and future fulfillment, I think, of this. Isaac was the immediate fulfillment. He's the physical child who would come directly from Abraham. But we also have this seed in a future fulfillment with Christ himself being the future aspect of this covenant. Also inherent in this, these descendants would be numerous. Now, if you notice your knowledge of this, what two figures of speech does God very clearly use to describe the numerous nature of Abraham's descendants? They would be like what? Okay, sand on the seashore and stars in the sky. So we have those are very clearly described as a figure of speech. They will be as this. They will be as this.
Yeah. So I have a question.
Yeah.
Now that you bring up the difference
between descendants and seed, uh-huh. And
these promises about, the stars and the sky and the sea, that promise was specifically to the one seed, like Isaac, mm-hmm. And then the one seed, Jacob.
It would come through them, yeah.
So, it almost seems like seed should have been used all the time. Am I thinking right? Because his other offspring went off and became other nations.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So it really was one seed each time.
That's the specific promise, right? Yeah. It's to your seed, through your seed. That's why when Ishmael was born, for instance, no, that's not where the promise is going to go. It's not to this child whom you're going to have with this other woman. Mm-hmm. It's going to be through you and your wife, Sarai, and that would be Isaac. Yeah, Gail?
Probably a little bit of a side question. When he made this promise to Abraham, mm-hmm. He was called Abram at that time.
Right.
And Sarah's name was something else.
Sarai, yep.
When and why? Did he
yeah. When do they change? What chapter is that? 17, thank you. Chapter 17 is when it changes. Verse 5, no longer shall your name be called Abram, but your name shall be Abraham, for I made you a father of many nations. Then, where's Sarai mentioned there? Verse 15. As for Sarai, your wife, you shall not call her Sarai, but Sarah shall be your name. So oftentimes, I mean, we see this in the New Testament too. Sometimes God changes the name, or Christ changes the name, like Peter and Cephas and all that kind of stuff. Changes the name to indicate a change in relationship with them, perhaps, or change in direction of that people, or to confirm something. So yeah, that happens later on. Yeah. Yes, sir?
What's interesting in this case is that you could argue that the covenant was not fully sealed with Abraham until after the name was, both of their names were changed. So he had, obviously, a child with Hagar.
Right.
But it wasn't until Abraham, because Abram means exalted father,
mm-hmm.
and Sarai means my princess, the diminutive, both diminutive forms. And when God changed their names, he added the only letter that appears twice in the Tetragrammaton, the letter Hey. So when doing that, he changed Abram's name to literally a father of a multitude by insertion of a piece of God's name. And Sarai became from a diminutive princess to basically the princess.
Yeah, and I think Abraham itself means prince with God.
Right.
Yeah.
So, like, the insertion of, the changing of their names in particular by the insertion of a letter from his name,
mm-hmm.
is pretty prominent. It's,
yeah.
It's pretty, I think, informative.
Yeah, interesting. Good. Right? Yeah, go ahead.
The reference to great expanse in the stars of the sky, is that a tying just Abraham's physical descendants that are children of Israel, or does that also include the people of faith that are grafted in the church?
Well, again, I think we could say there's the immediate aspect of that and the future aspect of that, because he'll go on. This is really the third part, a great nation, mentioned that. There's also where'd it go? I'm getting ahead of myself here. Sorry. There's also a part of this where he says, in you all the nations of the earth will be blessed. Yes, that's what that ultimately refers to, yeah. Through the faith of Abraham, which Paul talks about in Romans 4, Romans 9, that through that faith that we have, we have become part of that blessing. We've been grafted in, if you want to use that term even. So I think the immediate is, yes, his physical descendants, specifically through Isaac, and as his family grew, right? Because by the time you get to the Exodus, there's guesstimates that the people of Israel numbered like 1 to 2 million people. That's a lot of people from the 70 that initially went down. But then you broaden that out even past the church age, and even as Israelite history went on, it obviously grows. Yeah. All right, so there'll be a great nation. This is also included here. Even his own name would be great. Now, I pointed out with the Tower of Babel, when people seek to make their own name great, like they wanted to at Babel, that's problematic. When God seeks to make our name great, that's blessed. And I pointed this out, this comparison between chapter 11 and chapter 12. Here's now God, it's as if God is saying, "What man, you tried to make yourself great, and I put that down, I thwarted that plan, and here's what I have in place. I will make your name great. I will make you a great nation as well." There'd be a lot of people who would, of course, stem from this one man. I think one of the most striking things about this whole section, as you read on in the text, is the age markers for Abraham. How old was Abraham when God first gives him this covenant in chapter 12? 75 years old. And then you keep going. In chapter 16, he was 86 when Hagar gave birth to Ishmael. He was 99 when God appeared and promised him a child, not Ishmael. Later on, 99 years old when he was circumcised. 100 years old when Isaac was born. And 175 when he died. He was 100 years old. There was a 25-year time period from the first time that God gave him this covenant to when Isaac was born. That's faith that Abram had. To trust the Lord, to follow the Lord, to believe the Lord. Now they try to manipulate it, right, with Hagar. So, well, God hasn't done this yet, so here's Hagar. And it's like, Abraham, okay. And he goes on and, what are you doing? And God says, no, it's not that. I'm going to do this, and you're going to know it's from me because you and your wife are past a normal time period when people would be having babies. Now, a very interesting thing is that after Sarah dies, Abraham has another wife, and he has lots more kids. It's almost a little comical that Abraham thought he was well past the age, and from a human perspective, we would agree. But God has a funny way of doing things that God can only do. And God even allowed him to have more children after this. But this is just an interesting thing. 25 years from the time that this was first given to the time that Isaac was born. You ever pray for something for years and it hasn't happened yet? 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, 25 years? I mean, there are times that people pray for things for year upon year upon year. And the temptation can be to say, well, God must not be hearing me, or, you know, whatever. And God has a way of just putting us right in the right spot, sometimes years later, before he'll answer that prayer. Be patient. Be patient. Okay? A little side comment there as well. Now, the third part of the covenant was the blessing. Chapter 12, verse 3, I will bless them that bless thee, I'll curse him that curses thee, and in thee shall all the families of the earth be blessed. I think there's several things here. The blessing was personal. I'll bless you. Blessing was recognizable. I'll make your name great. What does that mean? I will make your name great. Okay, recognized. Be recognition there. But if you think about even in comparison to chapter 11, let us make a name for ourselves. Make ourselves a great name. Yeah. Be remembered. This would be something that would be passed down even for years to come. That's true today still, isn't it? The name of Abraham is still a great name even today. It's very important. It's important to the Jewish nation. They claim Abraham as their father. It's important to the Muslim nation. They also claim Abraham as their father, though not through Isaac. And it's obviously important to us as Christians. The three monotheistic religions of the world. Abraham's name is great. Okay, that has come true. That's very true today. It was relational. You will be a blessing to many people is kind of implied there. If I can say it this way, it was judgmental. God says, I will bless those who bless you, and I will curse those who curse you. That's an interesting point of this covenant as well. God will not just bless Abram. God will bless those who bless Abram. And you can see that played out through history as well. So there's this judgmental aspect, if we can call it that. And an international aspect, and you shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Now, we hinted at this, but how can that be true? This part of the covenant, that in you all the nations of the earth will be, all the families of the earth will be blessed. How can that be? Salvation. It happens through salvation. Let me put up a couple of verses here. Romans 4:11. It says, Abraham is the father of all those who believe. There is a legitimacy that we can say, Abraham is my spiritual father. Through faith. That's the link. Romans 9. It talks about there the importance of the faith of Abraham. Galatians 3:8 quotes this verse in arguing for the fact that the gospel has been given to the Gentiles. This is how we become partakers of the blessings. As Gentiles, this covenant was not given to us, right? It was given to Abraham. It was a Jewish covenant. Well, the Jews weren't called Jews at the time, but it was given to them. It was not given to us, but through him, all the families of the earth could also be blessed. And as Paul describes in Romans especially, it's through the faith that we have. Yes?
It almost stretched that, the high idea the whole world will be blessed because of the fact of believers being in the world. It tamps down the evil. Like, if you want to look at the microcosm of the U.S., the U.S. for a long while was a great place to live because there was so much influence of believers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take that believership out and it gets chaotic and yucky.
Right.
So in one sense, that blessing is made throughout the world because of believers.
Yeah, good point. Kind of a suppressing aspect that Christianity in general and Christians specifically have. You think about what would happen if somehow all the believers of the United States were removed. You think it's bad now. What would happen if all of the believers of the world were removed? Well, as I read the scripture, that's going to happen. And we know it's going to happen after that. Yeah, right? Right. Right. And you read about what's going to happen in the world after believers are raptured. It is nutso. On a worldwide scale. So yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, good. Yes, Gail?
A question.
Mm-hmm.
When Abraham was told that he and Sarah were going to have children, Sarah laughed.
Right.
So I'm thinking her face probably wasn't... How do I say this?
It wasn't like ours, was it?
No. She was very old. And there's a lot of us who laughed.
Well, the reason I'm saying that, though, was because wasn't she the one that encouraged her husband to have relations with him?
Right.
Yeah. That there would be a son, because I don't think she really believed it was, and she was bitter. She was very bitter about that.
Yeah.
It was how many years later that she actually had a child? After Ishmael.
Well.
Yeah, after Ishmael.
So 86 when Ishmael was born, and 100 when Isaac was born. So it's 14 years.
I just wonder if, because she laughed at God, if maybe, if she hadn't, that maybe Isaac would have come along first between them.
Tough to tell.
That's a question.
It's like a soap opera.
Oh,
but you're right. It was Sarai, at the time, who made the initial move. Hey, Abraham, take my handmaid Hagar.
Yeah.
God's obviously waited a long time. He must be waiting for us to do something. So here you go. That's why I say, and Abraham said, okay. And went and did it. Yeah, John?
There's a note in my Bible for the verse that says that Abraham laughed. It says that he probably experienced a temporary measure of disbelief.
Sure.
And so it could be similar for Sarah as well.
Yeah. Again, this is from a human perspective. These people are way past childbearing age. And there'd be some skepticism. God, are you... Are you sure? I mean, I'm 99 years old. My wife's no spring chicken either. She was 91. Okay, this is, what are you doing? Are you sure about this? And isn't it this time where God says, is anything impossible for the Lord? So God can do what he says he can do, even when we don't think it's humanly possible. Because with God, nothing is impossible. All right, go through all these again. So to conclude this, our faith is what links us to being blessed in Abraham. Again, read Romans, and you find Paul using this language, especially chapter 4, especially chapter 9. It's our faith. Now, Abraham believed God. He believed what God was promising. Abraham did not have all of the details that we do, but Abraham had the faith that we do. We look back and we have the details. His name was Jesus. He was born in Bethlehem. His mother's Mary. And we have all these details like that. But the link between those two is the faith. We believe God, and God counts that as righteousness. Yes?
I'm thinking about what Gail said. And I really, truly think that God all along wanted it to be so extreme that not only they had extreme faith from there on, but all of us. If you look at all the biblical characters, he really picks people and circumstances that make us realize God did that.
Without question.
And so I really truly believe that it wasn't because Sarah had doubt that he prolonged that time frame. He knew they were going to get antsy. And he can do that to us to make us really see, what you said, you meant this, and I should have believed, I should have been patient.
Mm-hmm.
And I truly believe that by starting the group of Israelites, he had to really impress upon everybody, God is the one that is doing this. God decided, this is what is going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
You are my chosen people, and I want to make it so clear to everybody that comes in contact with you, you are my chosen people, and my word is this, believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's without question, this has to be God doing it. It has to be God doing it. There's no human explanation with this. It has to be recognized as God. Yeah, I think it's a good point.
And there were even points that I thought later on when they go to Egypt, when they enter, there's twice that Abraham says, Sarah's my sister.
Yep.
To protect himself.
Right.
Because she was beautiful. It flips me out that at that age, he's afraid that somebody's going to take her as his harem or wife or whatever,
yep,
and kill him off. But he's afraid of that.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a certain time where that time frame, that interaction, is right around when Isaac, I think, was in the oven, so to speak. I can't remember exactly where it is, but I think, wow, the Lord was there. The Lord was protecting her because it was clear she's going to be pregnant at a certain time, and it's going to be you, Isaac.
Yep.
You and her.
And God worked in spite of Abraham's deception.
Right.
Yeah, good. All right, anything else? Yeah, Rick?
Yeah, that's what I gleaned from it. All the way down through this, no matter what man did, schemed, God's got a plan. You do what you're going to do. My plan's going to
That's right. That's right. God will do what he says he'll do. Yeah. Yeah, Joan?
Just a side note. If you go on the internet, you can see where Abraham and Sarah are buried. And that's cool to look at that.
Mm. Yeah, very good. All right, we'll stop there for today then, and we'll continue.